Part 4. Wanda Selden. Selden, Wanda. In the waning years of Harry Selden's life, he grew most attached to, some say dependent upon, his granddaughter, Wanda. Orphaned in her teens, Wanda Selden devoted herself to her grandfather's psychohistory project, filling the vacancy left by Hugo Amaril. The content of Wanda Selden's work remains largely a mystery, for it was conducted in virtually total isolation. The only individuals allowed access to Wanda Selden's research were Harry himself and a young man named Stettin Palver, whose descendant, Preem, would 400 years later contribute to the rebirth of Trantor as the planet rose from the ashes of the Great Sack, 300 FE. Although the full extent of Wanda Selden's contribution to the Foundation is unknown, it was undoubtedly of the greatest magnitude. Encyclopedia Galactica. 1. Harry Selden walked into the Galactic Library, limping a little, as he did more and more often these days, and made for the banks of skitters, the little vehicles that slid their way along the interminable corridors of the building complex. He was held up, however, by the sight of three men seated at one of the galactography alcoves, with the galactograph showing the galaxy in full three-dimensional representation, and, of course, its worlds slowly pinwheeling around its core, spinning at right angles to that as well. From where Selden stood, he could see that the border province of Anacreon was marked off in glowing red. It skirted the edge of the galaxy and took up a great volume, but it was sparsely populated with stars. Anacreon was not remarkable for either wealth or culture, but was remarkable for its distance from Trantor, 10,000 parsecs away. Selden, acting on impulse, took a seat at a computer console near the three and set up a random search he was sure would take an indefinite period. Some instinct told him that such an intense interest in Anacreon must be political in nature. Its position in the galaxy made it one of the least secure holdings of the current imperial regime. His eyes remained on his screen, but Selden's ears were open for the discussion near him. One didn't usually hear political discussions in the library. They were, in point of fact, not supposed to take place. Selden did not know any of the three men. That was not entirely surprising. There were habitués of the library, quite a few, and Selden knew most of them by sight, and some even to talk to. But the library was open to all citizens, no qualifications. Anyone could enter and use its facilities. For a limited period of time, of course, only a select few, like Selden, were allowed to set up shop in the library. Selden had been granted the use of a locked private office and complete access to library resources. One of the men, Selden thought of him as Hooknose for obvious reasons, spoke in a low, urgent voice. "Let it go," he said. "Let it go. It's costing us a mint to try to hold on, and even if we do, it will only be while they're there. They can't stay there forever, and as soon as they leave, the situation will revert to what it was." Selden knew what they were talking about. The news had come over Trantorvision only 3 days ago that the Imperial government had decided on a show of force to bring the obstreperous governor of Anacreon into line. Selden's own psychohistorical analysis had shown him that it was a useless procedure, but the government did not generally listen when its emotions were stirred. Selden smiled slightly and grimly at hearing Hooknose say what he himself had said, and the young man said it without the benefit of any knowledge of psychohistory. Hooknose went on. "If we leave Anacreon alone, what do we lose? It's still there, right where it always was, right at the edge of the Empire. It can't pick up and go to Andromeda, can it? So it still has to trade with us, and life continues. What's the difference if they salute the Emperor or not? You'll never be able to tell the difference." The second man, whom Selden had labeled Baldy, for even more obvious reasons, said, "Except this whole business doesn't exist in a vacuum. If Anacreon goes, the other border provinces will go. The Empire will break up." "So what?" whispered Hooknose fiercely. "The Empire can't run itself effectively anymore anyway. It's too big. Let the border go and take care of itself, if it can. The inner worlds will be all the stronger and better off. The border doesn't have to be ours politically. It will still be ours economically." And now the third man, Red Cheeks, said, I wish you were right, but that's not the way it's going to work. If the border provinces establish their independence, the first thing each will do will be to try to increase its power at the expense of its neighbors. There will be war and conflict, and every one of the governors will dream of becoming emperor at last. It will be like the old days before the kingdom of Trantor, a dark age that will last for thousands of years. Baldi said, "Surely things won't be that bad. The empire may break up, but it will heal itself quickly when people find out that the breakup just means war and impoverishment. They'll look back on the golden days of the intact empire, and all will be well again. We're not barbarians, you know. We'll find a way."
"Absolutely," said Hooknose. "We've got to remember that the empire has faced crisis after crisis in its history and has pulled through time and again."
But Red Cheeks shook his head as he said, "This is not just another crisis. This is something much worse. The empire has been deteriorating for generations. 10 years' worth of the junta destroyed the economy, and since the fall of the junta and the rise of this new emperor, the empire has been so weak that the governors on the periphery don't have to do anything. It's going to fall of its own weight."
"And the allegiance to the emperor," began Hooknose.
"What allegiance?" said Red Cheeks. "We went for years without an emperor after Cleon was assassinated, and no one seemed to mind much. And this new emperor is just a figurehead. There's nothing he can do. There's nothing anyone can do. This isn't a crisis. This is the end."
The other two stared at Red Cheeks, frowning. Baldi said, "You really believe it? You think that the imperial government will just sit there and let it all happen?"
"Yes. Like you two, they won't believe it is happening. That is, until it's too late."
"What would you want them to do if they did believe it?" asked Baldi.
Red Cheeks stared into the galactograph, as if he might find an answer there. "I don't know. Look, in due course of time, I'll die. Things won't be too bad by then. Afterward, as the situation gets worse, other people can worry about it. I'll be gone. And so will the good old days. Maybe forever. I'm not the only one who thinks this, by the way. Ever hear of someone named Harry Seldon?"
"Sure," said Hooknose at once. "Wasn't he first minister under Cleon?"
"Yes," said Red Cheeks. "He's some sort of scientist. I heard him give a talk a few months back. It felt good to know I'm not the only one who believes the empire is falling apart. He said
everything's going to pot and there's going to be a permanent dark age," Baldi interjected.
"Well, no," said Red Cheeks. "He's one of these real cautious types. He says it might happen, but he's wrong. It will happen."
Seldon had heard enough. He limped toward the table where the three men sat and touched Red Cheeks on the shoulder.
"Sir," he said, "may I speak to you for a moment?"
Startled, Red Cheeks looked up, and then he said, "Hey, aren't you Professor Seldon?"
"I always have been," said Seldon. He handed the man a reference tile bearing his photograph. "I would like to see you here in my library office at 4 p.m. day after tomorrow. Can you manage that?"
"I have to work."
"Call in sick if you have to. It's important."
"Well, I'm not sure, sir."
"Do it," said Seldon. "If you get into any sort of trouble over it, I'll straighten it out. And meanwhile, gentlemen, do you mind if I study the galaxy simulation for a moment? It's been a long time since I've looked at one."
They nodded mutely, apparently abashed at being in the presence of a former first minister. One by one, the men stepped back and allowed Seldon access to the galactograph controls. Seldon's finger reached out to the controls, and the red that had marked off the province of Anacreon vanished. The galaxy was unmarked, a glowing pinwheel of mist brightening into the spherical glow at the center, behind which was the galactic black hole. Individual stars could not be made out, of course, unless the view were magnified. But then only one portion or another of the galaxy would be shown on the screen, and Seldon wanted to see the whole thing, to get a look at the empire that was vanishing. He pushed a contact, and a series of yellow dots appeared on the galactic image. They represented the habitable planets, 25 million of them. They could be distinguished as individual dots in the thin fog that represented the outskirts of the galaxy, but they were more and more thickly placed as one moved in toward the center.
There was a belt of what seemed solid yellow, but which would separate into individual dots under magnification around the central glow. The central glow itself remained white and unmarked, of course. No habitable planets could exist in the midst of the turbulent energies of the core. Despite the great density of yellow, not one star in 10,000, Selden knew, had a habitable planet circling it. This was true despite the planet-molding and terraforming capacities of humanity. Not all the molding in the galaxy could make most of the worlds into anything a human being could walk on in comfort and without the protection of a spacesuit. Selden closed another contact. The yellow dots disappeared, but one tiny region glowed blue. Trantor and the various worlds directly dependent on it. As close as it could be to the central core and yet remaining insulated from its deadliness, it was commonly viewed as being located at the center of the galaxy, which it wasn't, not truly. As usual, one had to be impressed by the smallness of the world of Trantor, a tiny place in the vast realm of the galaxy. But within it was squeezed the largest concentration of wealth, culture, and governmental authority that humanity had ever seen. And even that was doomed to destruction. It was almost as though the men could read his mind, or perhaps they interpreted the sad expression on his face. Baldy asked softly, "Is the Empire really going to be destroyed?" Selden replied, softer still, "It might. It might. Anything might happen." He rose, smiled at the men, and left. But in his thoughts, he screamed, "It will. It will."